And my passion is to rid this great nation of America of soccer.
Soccer here in the U.S. is due in part to the influx of immigrants saying, quote, I promise you, no American whose great-grandfather was born here is watching soccer.
This is a waste of our time, energy, and resources. Use a bitch, your one more probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish, I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Paula's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, furnace, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness,
I have a dream. I will not rest.
Hey, what's going on? It's your Let's Drinks Football. This is season 2 of Let's Drinks Football officially. It's your host, Gabe Leisure. I'm here. We are sticking to the old format. This is Evan Matier, obviously, joining me. Because I think that, Evan, what we realized, or I realized, was that trying to do the streaming thing would work really well. I think we'd be really good at it if we could dedicate essentially unlimited time to it.
Yeah, or if we like didn't have jobs.
Yeah, right. If like this is what we could do all day, I think that streaming could be a really cool thing. The problem is we don't. We both have jobs. We are normal people who exist in the world and have to live and have an income.
Yeah, yeah, and it makes us, you know, gives this format gives us a lot more flexibility when we record, how we record, when we release it. You know, we can record, you know, two in a weekend and then stagger them. Like, there's just a lot more that we can do this way.
Yeah, exactly. We can have actual guests who don't want to like have their themselves on Google Video
streamed on Google Video.
Yeah, like go back. We're just moving back to that old school thing where we actually do a serious or like, you know, do our show. I was gonna say do a serious show, but like, you know, do our show. And we're gonna get guests on. I have some guests who are lined up who are interested in coming on. I think the most interesting thing is our friend Kier, shout out Kier, what's up, man? After the Columbus Crew litigation, or as it continues, we have some people who listened to our interview of Mickey Turner who are involved in that litigation who may be willing to come on the show. So if you're listening to this and you're involved in that litigation, please reach out because we'd love to talk more about it. It's very interesting, especially now, Evan, that you have time to actually discuss. You can actually discuss some of this stuff because you've changed jobs.
I've changed jobs. I've changed states, countries, some might say. I'm out of Texas. I'm a Californian now, apparently.
Yeah.
I live in San Francisco now, but the constraints of working for the federal judiciary are off. I can talk about anything now. I can say fuck Donald Trump all I want,
which is crucial because we actually have a topic. In fact, the first two, the first really not two, but we've got a bunch of really just, we're playing our old material, folks. This is an old school show.
Look, dude, we have a brand, okay?
We gotta play the classics.
Our brand is extremely stupid, but that's what the brand is.
We gotta play the classics. So when you all started tagging us in an incredible exchange this is just our classic stuff. RG, Reduced Ability, back. He's mixing it up. And what really happened is that he got dunked on by Petr Cech.
Yo, I believe the clickbait intro for this is Petr Cech destroys Reduced Ability in one tweet.
And it's incredible. They had a whole fight about it, which is amazing. And what happened was Petr Cech said something along the lines of he added Arsenal saying, "We share important values which make us a big club, not only on the football side. Fair competition, professionalism, and sportsmanship are the biggest ones you teach young footballers, and it's sad to see when other clubs don't share the same values." And he was adding Bayer Leverkusen, talking about Bernd Leno. And they were just kind of, I think they were sort of dunking on him. I'm not exactly sure what the exact thing that Petr Cech was fighting about, but RG decided to mix it up saying, professionalism. How can you even talk about professionalism when you haven't improved your distribution after nearly 2 decades of training? You've embarrassed yourself, your club, and the supporters. Registability, RG, man, coming in hot. Coming in hot.
It's hard to... No, it's like hard to even know where to fucking start with this one. First off, it's not clear like what does professionalism mean here?
Well, that's exactly what Petr Cech said. Petr Cech quote tweeting him, dunking on him, saying maybe try to Google what professionalism actually means.
Yeah, it doesn't mean like good at this specific aspect of football.
And he is. So let's be clear. Petr Cech is actually quite good at. I mean, he is good at distribution. He's a good player. And the fact that, I mean, RG is one of these Twitter accounts that makes their entire brand on doing really hot takes about all these different things. And just like, so it's both saying stuff like, Messi really, you know, one of the things I never see about Messi is that he is, no one talks about how good at dribbling he is, and then he does a compilation or something, and like he gets 20,000 retweets because, you know, he's saying something that actually everyone else is saying already, or he says some really hot take that sounds really profound, like, how can you talk about professionalism when you haven't improved your distribution after nearly 2 decades, but actually is sort of meaningless because professionalism has nothing to do with your actual skill on the pitch. It really doesn't.
I mean, it's not really like any different than any subscriber of Arsenal Fan TV who would, you know, post a, you know, after an Arsenal loss, post a tweet like, you know, something like, oh my God, Petr Cech sucks. Like, it's pretty much just that, except with a small, like, he's got the background of some kind, I don't fucking know, to put a small, just the smallest patina of credibility or like legitimacy on it. But it, at base, it's just a holy shit, Petr Cech is the worst tweet.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
It seems that what is really amazing to me is how many people take his account seriously. And like, we made fun of him with Jack and with James and other people who've come on the show. We've made fun of him. We're going to continue to make fun of him. But it does sort of blow my mind that this is one of those accounts that we actually have to talk about a lot. And Petr Cech, of course, you can dunk on whoever you want to dunk on. That's awesome. I mean, I think it's just got to be that the fact that he's gotten so many people to buy into this vision of his account as one that's like actually saying really important, meaningful things about the game. And, you know, people will ask him these really serious questions like, RG, how do you view Luke Shaw's movement for United? And he'll give them this absolute nonsensical answer. And like, it's just fucking stop taking this guy so seriously. He's such an obvious fraud.
Jesus Christ. So I was just looking at some recent tweets. A recent tweet. He was asked by Emery Ball at Emery Squad. Thoughts on the ongoing Serena Messi GOAT athlete debate?
No.
RG could get me banned, but Serena Williams isn't even a top 100 athlete in her own sport, which is say not one of the top 100 tennis players. This woman just played for the U.S. Open Championship, and so she was at least one of the two best players like this month, let alone all sports figures combined. What an absolute nonsense thing to say. I mean, it's empirically untrue, right? I mean, we can take whatever empirics, you know, championships, rankings, like it's just empirically wrong, but it's just the hottest of flaming takes.
Right. And he just does it to, I mean, he's just so, it's such a transparent grift, and to watch him like get these people like that really is, you're grifting someone when you convince people to like give a shit about you. So when you say stuff like Serena Williams isn't even in the top 100 athletes in her sport, when she's not just, I mean, that we don't even need to get into this because it's not a debate. Serena Williams, the only debate with her is whether she's the best ever in her sport or whether someone else is maybe has her on something, right? Like that's the only question. She is, it's like, well, Michael Jordan or LeBron James, really, he isn't even in the hot top 100 of his sport, let alone the world. It's like, that's insane. It's an insane thing to say.
Yeah, just like, you know, Joe Montana, he never really should have been starting.
Right. He should have never been starting. He really was terrible. Not a winner. I mean, this is just nonsense. And what's
not,
really,
not very professional. That's the problem. That's Serena's not professional. She's not professional.
That's what it is.
He ranks players based on their professionalism. And so she's not in the top 100 professional players.
We cracked
the code.
Figured it out.
It's like the fucking QAnon of sports commentary. He's leaving breadcrumbs and we're putting it together.
We are putting it together. Everyone should take a look, dive into what he's saying and put everything together, because I think it's about a worldwide conspiracy to root out people that are non-professional. And non-professional is just a code. See, folks, it's just a code word for people Reggie Stabile doesn't like.
He doesn't like.
Personally. I mean, shout out also to Didier Drogba, who jumped in on top of all this and who is genuinely one of my favorite players in the history of this sport. So Didier Drogba just did the laughing emoji at Reggie Stabile, which is awesome. I'm so glad Didier Drogba is in the mix here. This is a great thing to jump in on.
I mean, it's just such an impressive troll when you get two like all time great players. I guess Drogba definitely is an all time great. Petr Cech maybe not, but you know, still he's a very good, you know, Champions League player. You get two great players to dunk on you in a week. That's a good week's work if you're a troll.
Oh yeah, that's definitely true. It's a really good grift. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, what his entire. I've had a really funny reply. What his entire shtick is in terms of what he actually likes. I'm pretty sure he's just a Pep Guardiola like kind of fanboy type guy who just follows that dude around. But whatever else he is, he really is a top line football Twitter grifter, and he's done a really good job in creating this persona for himself that people follow and give a shit about, which is quite impressive. And making yourself into a person that Petr Cech responds to, pretty good. Not so bad. Champions League winner Petr Cech, by the way.
Well, Champions League winner confronts fact-based account.
He only tells the truth, folks. Only the truth.
No matter what you think about it.
I mean, I think Reggie Stabile is just a perfect like the epitome of what the hell is like. Wait, what even is happening anymore? I mean, like, what is going on? Like, just this world is falling apart at the seams, and just an amazing.
No, you're wrong. we're having a regular one.
Yeah,
Reggie Stabile he's a very normal Twitter user. And everything is fine. Okay.
Well, let me just read some things that happened since we, you know, we took our season break. Let me just read just a smattering of things that have happened. Just one news story from the last few weeks. And I'm just going to read the series of headlines that came out of this. FIFA President Gianni Infantino is due to hold a meeting with President Donald Trump at the White House today. Next one. Gianni Infantino, alongside Trump in Oval Office, as POTUS discussed his complaints about Google searches. Donald J. Trump. Google searches for Trump news shows only the viewing/reporting of fake news media. In other words, they have it rigged for me and others. In the Oval Office just now, Donald Trump to FIFA President Gianni Infantino. Soccer, it's a game. I guess you call it football, but over here, maybe someday, they will change the name. Infantino interjects, we can negotiate that.
We can negotiate that.
Trump welcomes FIFA President Gianni Infantino to White House. Quote, he is the president of FIFA and a highly respected man. In fact, when my son heard he was going to be here, he said, Dad, I would like to meet him. So you are pretty famous. It's pretty cool of Donald Trump Jr. to say that. Wants to meet Gianni Infantino. All right, I know that's not how it happened. All right, next one. FIFA President Gianni Infantino to Donald Trump in the Oval Office. Quote, it is a great honor to be here. Thanks for everything you are doing. We just had the World Cup in Russia. Nearly 4 billion viewers. Trump remained seated during the entire encounter while Gianni Infantino had to stand and look down upon him.
Yeah, that's so cool, though. That he's like, I don't know if he knows that he's pulling the like the like European monarch protocol where like he sits in his throne and they stand and talk to him the whole time.
I think he just likes to sit down, to be honest.
I think he just likes to sit down. So that's what's so cool about it, though, is like he doesn't know that he's doing the like tyrannical monarch protocol thing. He's just stumbling into it for the same reason that the original tyrannical monarchs did, which is just, I want to sit and fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. That's why Trump's on 2026 World Cup. 2026, maybe I won't be here, but maybe they will extend the term. A good reason, Infantino appears to say over talking POTUS. Trump tells FIFA President Infantino, quote, if they don't extend it, his term through the 2026 World Cup, the media is going to be very boring and they will all go out of business, I guess. Infantino shows Trump a red card at the White House. Gianni Infantino, you are part of the FIFA team now. Donald Trump, that's good. Oh, guys, I mean,
there's also the picture of him getting the jersey with like with Trump on it. I guess it's probably a U.S. soccer jersey. It was not clear, or if it's just like a
generic FIFA jersey. FIFA jersey.
Like that wasn't clear, but definitely
I want one of those. Yeah,
they also gave one to Jared Kushner. I think got one.
Yeah.
It was great. A lot.
It's all
it was
great. A lot. It's all really good. I mean, these people. Gianni Infantino about 2 weeks ago sat next to Putin and did his whole thing about how great Russia had done during the World Cup. So everything is totally normal with them. And I think the best way to cap this all off is to say that I made one joke about this where I wrote an article, first of all, about it. And I posted it on Manage Madrid. Everyone hated it.
They did not like it.
You all screw yourselves. I thought it was pretty funny. I made one other joke about it where I said everyone should add Infantino as our patron, Sepp Blatter, my dad.
My grandfather Sepp Blatter,
as he had done, Sepp at Infantino, and finally, at Infantino responds. And remember, at Infantino is a children's toy company based in California.
Make like rattles and pacifiers, like artisanal pacifiers.
Yeah, and they responded to me. Oops, looks like you've tagged the wrong account. We're not Gianni Infantino, but we do love the FIFA World Cup. As a toy company, we love all things sports and play.
Finally, it only took months of us tagging Infantino anytime FIFA came up.
Oh, it's so good. I'm so happy that they did that, because what is amazing to me is they didn't at Sepp Blatter when he did it the first time. So they must have gotten so many people responding to this and making this comment and like adding them for all the bullshit that Gianni Infantino does, that they finally feel like they have to respond to people and say like, please stop adding us. This is not what we do.
Like, stop connecting us with this man. Yo, remember when Gianni Infantino was supposed to be like a new leaf in FIFA? He was going to like reform the organization. That was a long time ago.
I'm excited because Sepp Blatter, we've talked about this briefly on our live show, but Sepp Blatter has a book coming out called My Truth.
Yeah, My Truth is going to be fantastic.
It's a good follow-up to his first book, My Struggle. Oh, that's bad. That's terrible. Yeah, so we're excited about that. And, you know, what the hell? The world's going to hell. Everything is exploding.
If I could write some kind of shitty memoir and, like, make any amount of money at all, I would get paid. I would write it and get paid.
Oh, I 100% would. I would call it Everything is Fine.
We're all okay.
Speaking of everything being fine, let's just do the normal stuff. Let's do this normal thing. So stop talking about just our own bullshit, like extremely, you know,
like
LFF
we find
head
very
hours.
Funny, but maybe nobody else finds funny.
Let's talk about the UEFA Nations League, or as I think
you mean the League of Nations,
right? The League of Nations, which as I think you are implying, is going to be just as successful as that famously useful body that definitely prevented any future wars and created peace in our time.
It's going to fail to prevent like a friendly competition between Russia and Japan, and the controversy over that is going to cause it to collapse.
I wrote an article about it. I think the crucial thing about the Nations League is how weirdly convoluted it is.
It is Byzantine. It is so fucking Byzantine.
It makes very little sense. Like I say that as someone who really would have put up with more of, I mean, and to be frank, I still will put up with more semi-serious competitive international football instead of these absolutely useless international friendlies that serve no goddamn purpose. But what they did was they created a hybrid league slash cup where you have five different groups made up of 12 to 15 teams. Each team plays against two other teams in a subgroup. The team that comes in last in the subgroup gets relegated somehow for some reason. And it is truly, truly, I mean, and you can figure it out if you think hard enough and really sit down and draw it out. But it is absolutely incomprehensible.
So here are my thoughts on the League of Nations football edition is that, so first off, I think it's weird and not perfect, but I guess it's better. Like, just having watched a couple of these matches this weekend that I absolutely would not have watched if they were just friendlies, I think it's already clearly better than just worthless friendlies. Teams are more likely to play their actual players, especially just after the World Cup. There's no way Harry Kane plays in that game against Spain if it's just a friendly.
No, God, no.
No, absolutely no way. But the thing is that, you know, the carrot here, right? The reason that you care about the League of Nations is not because you get to say you won the League of Nations, which we know nobody can do or ever has. What you get is you get a basically easy in to the finals, to the Euro 20, whatever it will be, 2020.
Euro 2020.
You get if you do well enough, you get like an auto bid into Euro 2020, and so you get to take it a lot easier during qualification. Like, that's the carrot. And so like it makes people care enough, and so the games are a little bit more fun. But I agree with you that the weirdest thing is just how convoluted the whole thing is. Yeah. And I was reading Kim McCauley's article explaining everything, and the thing that got me was like each individual decision makes sense on its own. Like each little structure, each little subgroup, like I get it. I get why they did it. I get that, like, the relegation thing, but having different leagues, like you generally want to clump people together by, you know, how good they are, so that you have competitive matches instead of just having England shitting on Bosnia Herzegovina every, you know, all the time. So like I get that, and I get, you know, but the end result of each of these individual decisions is this absolutely incomprehensible thing that nobody knows how it works, and like we're lawyers looking at it and we can figure it out eventually, but most people do not have the time or the obsession, the neurosis that we have to figure it out. They do not have that. They don't care, and they're going to be very confused as to what these games actually do.
Exactly. And, I mean, like, the number one thing that you want when you're designing a new soccer league or a sports league of any kind is to, when you Google the league, to just see a bunch of explainer charts. Like, just as many charts as possible, then you know you've done a good job.
Is I want to have like a McKinsey-produced slide deck to explain to me, you know, with edits from KPMG to explain to me the organizational chart of the football game I'm watching.
I literally saw one of those. I'm not sure if it was McKinsey. I think it was PwC. But, like, the whole point is, why are you getting a, you know,
consultancy?
Making a football tournament that's so complicated that you need a slide deck. I mean, like, you need at least two slides to explain this. At least.
You're going to need the overall, like, groups, and you're going to need the subgroups.
You need the subgroups, and then you need the what happens after the games.
Yeah, like, at the very end, like, who – because it's, like, everybody – it's, like, four – I think they're either four or three-team groups, and a different thing happens to each team in the group. It's, like, the winner of the group goes through to, like, something else. The bottom of the, you know, bottom of the group goes gets relegated. It's all very weird.
Yeah, and, you know, shout out to the guy who first comment on my article, the guy who's like, you're an absolute idiot if you don't understand this. So, shout, like, congratulations to you for being just an absolute goddamn genius. Like this, it's, I'm not saying you can't. This is incomprehensible, but it is by far, by a large margin, the most complicated, not just international, but I think, you know, I think any international or any even national sports competition that I know of doesn't have as complex a rule system as this.
The only thing I can think of, and it only makes sense to us better because we grew up in it, is I can imagine if you're a foreigner, the whole of NCAA basketball is very confusing.
Oh, yeah. And then you need the –
it's like, oh, you have your conference, then you have your not your conference, and then there's a conference tournament. And if you win that, you're in the big tournament. But if you don't win that, they might pick you for the big tournament, but they might not. And then you might go to the less big tournament or nothing at all.
That's right. That's a good point.
Yeah, it is so that, sort of that like that. Kind of like that. There's like different ways to get into the big tournament, which is Euro 2020. And this new League of Nations is kind of like the conference tournament. It's an easier way in.
All that being said, in a utilitarian perspective, this is actually good. I mean, overall, right, the total amount of positive energy that this tournament will create in the universe is outweighs than the annoyance and negative energy. But the problem is that if they could have done this, they could have done it in a way where it was obviously good and didn't have any of those problems. But because it's such a convoluted clusterfuck FIFA style, like UEFA style, they had to make it impossible to understand. And because of that impossibility to understand, the teams aren't really taking it that seriously. Like, they're taking it seriously enough that they're going to roll out their starting lineups. It's marginally more serious than a friendly match, but it's not that much more serious than a friendly match.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the takeaway is that they ended up with a half measure, largely because that's like the big clubs who were kind of fine with the friend. Like, the big clubs were basically with the friendly system. They weren't going to go for much more than this, which has made them care slightly more. But they were already making money off their friendlies, and they'll make money off this too, but not a ton more.
I mean, frankly, I, as someone who cares more about club football than international football, like, I actually think that it's not as good to have so many like games where international players actually have to care.
Because they
injure themselves. Like, yeah, that, I mean, look so at Luke Shaw.
Definitely my mood right now. I know that I was not happy to see like all of Spurs' team called up to play in the League of Nations when they all just played basically to the quarterfinals or later of the World Cup. You'd hope that they could, you know, in the old system, there's no way any of them would have been called up. This would have just been reserve teams playing each other in post World Cup tune-ups, like see what the kids can do. But in this new system where we have to care, it's like, oh, World Cup's been over for a month. Let's get you guys back on the field.
Right. And so we had the first injury, right? We had Luke Shaw go down. It's not obvious how long he's going to be down, but he's injured because of this stupid game. And people get injured in friendlies even, but it's more likely to get injured in games where you have to care more. And England, I mean, if you're an English fan especially, you should fucking hate this because England already has the most competitive matches out of any of the major leagues because they've added two additional cups. The Carabao Cup, which is, you know, it depends. You don't really take it that seriously, but it is still a thing that you have to sort of care about. And then the is it the League Cup? I'm really not an English fan, but
it's the FA Cup. The Carabao Cup is the League Cup.
Okay,
they might not actually call it the Carabao Cup anymore. They change it like every year. So there's the League Cup, the FA Cup, then then just the normal stuff, right?
It's still the schedule, it's an extra tournament. It's just an extra for sure thing.
Creates more schedule congestion for European teams, and a lot of the top sides just completely punt on the League Cup. I know Spurs were in the final of it recently, and they lost, but they regularly just play the kids.
Hey, Spurs won the extremely prestigious played in the U.S. Cup this summer. So
yeah, that's just trophy. That's a worldwide international. Excuse me,
counts as a trophy.
It was the International Champions Cup.
What do these people want? I mean, like, they keep saying Pochettino doesn't win trophies. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's very important to remember. That's a really good point. Is is he has now for their trophy routed over. I don't want to hear about it's been since the 2008 League Cup. I don't want to hear no Premier Leagues. Like, fuck y'all. Like, does Barcelona play in the Premier League? No, right. I don't think that they do. They play does Roma play in the FA Cup? No, fuck you. They won the International Champions Cup.
I was on the Love Sport Radio with James Sherwood. Everyone should follow him. It's a fun show. And we talked a little bit about this match, and I actually predicted that Spain under new manager Luis Enrique would not fare as well as they did. And actually, did you actually get to watch this match, Evan? Because I watched this game, and Spain actually looked surprisingly good in a match where it wasn't clear how much either side cared, that they were starting their guys, and you know it did seem like both teams were at maybe not 100, but like 80%+. And I thought Spain looked actually pretty goddamn good. I also thought England looked pretty good, but Spain really did sort of overrun them in midfield. Like, they just had that extra midfield power that I was surprised that England didn't have a good response for. But it's also possible that England was absolutely tired because they were in the semifinals of the World Cup. Like, you know, or whatever, a month and a half ago.
Yeah. So I didn't see it because I was watching the defending college football champions beat the living hell out of South Carolina State. And so I missed the England game. I saw some whiny tweets about a Danny Welbeck goal that was disallowed.
I think about that.
So I saw that, and I saw a lot of people not caring a ton.
Yep.
And so I guess that's where that is. And I don't know. So I guess that means England and Spain are in the same group then?
Yeah, it's actually if it were the World Cup, it'd be the group of death because it's England, Spain, and Croatia.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
That's two World Cup semifinalists plus Spain could easily have been like a quarterfinalist if they didn't completely shit the bed.
And they look, but Spain did look better. I like them playing with Rodrigo. I sure hope.
So actually, Macaulay's article made a really good point that if you're not going to win your league, you absolutely have incentive to get fucking relegated. Now that England lost their opener to Spain, they should absolutely throw the rest of their matches because they're probably, or maybe you see how the next one goes, and if you like don't get the result from that, you just throw the rest of them because what you want is then you want to be in League Two with the likes of like fucking Northern Ireland's in League Two. It's like fine, but they're not Spain and Croatia.
Yeah, there.
And then in the next cycle, you get to just dominate your group.
And then you get automatic qualification.
You get automatic qualification. So, like, if it doesn't go well for you early, you just want to fucking throw it.
Really good incentive structure from UEFA. There were also a bunch of other games. I've seen some of them. I think the one that I was most impressed by was Brian Giggs' debut as well. Wales manager. Wales, obviously, my second team. Third team after the United States, I guess. But Wales, my second team in Europe. Looked really good. I mean, they were playing an absolutely useless and hopeless Ireland side, but they looked really good. And Gareth Bale was incredible. And I'm sort of excited about this new era for Wales with Brian Giggs. So that's all I have to say about this.
I mean, we really got robbed not being able to see Wales at the World Cup.
Yeah, it was very upsetting because like, I think
the best thing about the World Cup expansion, like the number of teams, besides the fact that it means the U.S. won't get left out anymore, is that Wales, like a team like Wales, absolutely will make it.
And they are the team, a team that's like, if Bale just sort of explodes, the type of team that's capable of just making a strange run like they did in the Euros. Like they could do pull a Russia and go to the quarterfinals or whatever.
The sad thing is that Bale's going to be kind of old by the next World Cup.
Yeah, and they won't be doping. Like they won't be. I mean, they will probably all be doping, but they won't be as openly and blatantly doping as the Russian national team in this last World Cup. So you saw Northern Ireland lose a stupid game to Bosnia. I bet that was fun.
No, that was very stupid. Like Northern Ireland had like 70% possession and then just gifted a couple goals and it was dumb. A pretty good example of why this all is kind of stupid.
It is all kind of dumb. International football, pretty dumb. In other news, the United States lost to Brazil 2-0. Brazil, but the United States, I think the only takeaway from that game is that the United States started the kids in a real way, which was exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, what can you expect from the Brazilian Tim Weah? He was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, what can you expect? He did score that penalty, Neymar. So that was fine. I mean, the penalty was a almost comic dive. And there was an amazing moment when DeAndre Yedlin went up to the referee after a Neymar dive and was like, "Did you see the World Cup? This guy dives."
It was really funny. It was also funny because of Neymar's whole his whole big stink after the World Cup about how he was gonna like be better and like not dive so much. But of course he's not going to do that. Like, he has every incentive to continue diving.
Yeah, and I mean, he does get fouled a lot too. So let's see. Importantly, I think, this is a really good point you made on the outline. I think the most important question about all this for the United States is, why don't they have a national team coach yet?
It's fucking infuriating.
Doesn't make any sense.
I am almost as mad about the fact that they don't have a coach as I was like 1 year ago that they had missed the World Cup.
It doesn't make any sense.
They're now doing what we wanted them to do, which is like play the kids, like never have Clint Dempsey, who's now retired, never have Josie Altidore, never have Mike Bradley. Those guys should never suit up again, or if they do, they suit up in like one home friendly.
Well, they pop on as substitutes to see if they can grab a goal or whatever.
Yeah. And especially they get a farewell tour, but like they're not going to be useful come the 2020 or the 2019 Gold Cup. So like, you know, banish them more or less. But like, it doesn't actually do you any good playing the kids if you don't have the coach who's going to put, you know, if they're not running the system that they're going to be playing in the 2019 Gold Cup. You have no idea what, you know, who's going to be good in that system until it's in place. And so it's just inconceivable that they haven't hired a guy yet. And for the longest time, the excuse was, oh, well, we want to hire a general manager or technical director, whatever the fuck they're calling it, first. But they've done that, as far as I understand. And they still haven't hired a coach. And we're not even hearing names anymore. Like, there's not even rumors anymore. I think they're just going to fucking roll with this dude. That's what I think is going to happen.
Really? This guy? Yeah. I mean, who is this guy? I mean, I'm worried. I mean, there are marginally worse things that the U.S. could do. Big Sam. Bring in Big Sam. David Moyes.
Big Sam is probably – he's probably walking around London or wherever the fuck he lives in like American flag socks and underwear for like the last year.
Dude, I bet Donald Trump would take a call with him if he called him up.
Such a good point.
Like, I mean, Cordero was at the White House with Gianni Infantino. Just if I were Big Sam, I'd just call him up, man. See if I get on the phone with Donald Trump. Then you get yourself appointed by the president to be U.S. men's national team coach. You say, look, well, I'm a winner. I've occasionally kept my team from getting relegated. There you go.
As we know, the one thing that political interference means, the one and only thing, it means nothing else other than the president of a country being involved in the selection of the head of the federation. That is the only thing that political interference means. It doesn't mean arresting the families and confiscating the passports of players or forcing them to show up at political rallies. It doesn't mean any of that.
Right,
it
or sending your star player to hang out with dictators or any of that stuff.
It does not mean that. That's not what political interference is. All it means is – whether or not the president of a country, and only the president, attempts to influence the selection of the national team, like coach and federation president.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about MLS just quickly, because the last segment I want to do is just about the Champions League draw. But with respect to MLS, for me, the big story, and maybe this is just my perspective as someone coming in from the perspective of both a DC United fan, sort of, that's sort of my team now, though I will say, I think that, Evan, and maybe this is a good place to start, I think that my team really is, because I haven't really fallen into DC United enough, I think I'm going to be a Miami fan.
A Miami fit?
Yeah, Internazionale Miami.
So pitch me why you're going to be an Inter Miami fan.
Because of the crest.
It's
the coolest crest in the league, and it's not that close. It's incredible. It finally chose the right type of name. Everyone was talking about all these other possible names. We've seen terrible names. I mean, whatever the this eventual Columbus crew, whatever they turn into, is going to be terribly named. It's I think they came up with one, actually, the Austin. It's like the Austin. Oh, shit, I can't.
Well, first it was going to be Austin Bold, I think. And now it's going to be just Austin FC.
Oh, well, that's marginally better, but I thought it was going to, I thought that I'd heard him Austin Bold, but I'm glad that Miami leaned into their sort of Hispanic and international city feel, vibe, and I love the crest. And also Griezmann said that he would go and play for David Beckham if he asked.
Griezmann is full of shit.
He is 1,000% full of
Griezmann
shit.
Griezmann is absolutely full of shit. Though I think that he would like his – like he loves the NBA. So I think if you could like – if you could get, somehow like include in his contract like a 5% or something – then you might keep – and, like, that actually is not unusual in Miami teams. Like, the fucking – the Marlins are owned by, like, half of the movie stars, like, Hispanic movie stars in the country. Like, everyone has an ownership stake in Miami teams. So, like, if you could do that, maybe Griezmann comes. But
and maybe
no,
– I mean, I bet he'd come if you just said, yeah, we'll put you – we'll give you season tickets to the Heat. Right. And you can practice with the team.
Right, you get to hang out with Goran Dragic. He plays for the Heat still, right?
Yeah, I mean, that I'm excited. He does.
I mean, look, here's the thing, though. The DC, of the other crests, DC United has a pretty good crest.
Yeah, DC United really does. That's true. And DC United is exciting right now.
Is exciting right now. It just has a new stadium. It's your town. Like, that should mean something. It also has, like, a really good history. Like, you have – look, not only do you have no actual connection to Miami that I'm aware of, but have you spent much time in Miami?
No. No, I really
– I don't think you would like Miami that much.
I don't know. Yeah, I think that every single thing I've heard about Miami makes me think I would hate every second of it. Other than like maybe going to the Miami. Cuban neighborhoods and having a nice sandwich. But like
that's like the best part of Miami, but the rest of Miami is so sceney that I don't know.
I mean, I am the type of person who does like to go to the top of a building and rent out a club and buy flaming bottles of $20 champagne that they're selling for $2,000.
Spend $6,000 on a bottle of Cristal and do like 3 grams of coke.
I mean, that is sort of Karim Benzema does sort of look like a Miami area drug dealer. Like he dresses like it.
So like that, yeah, Karim Benzema absolutely would make sense there. I mean, Griezmann in a sense would, though not with his most recent haircut. That was his World Cup haircut,
which was
very, very bad.
Very bad.
But he would make some sense in Miami.
Can we just quickly talk about how incredible that Wayne Rooney play was? I mean, like, I think everyone knows what we're talking about, but I'll just quickly describe it. It's a play where DC United was tied with a club that they were playing, and they were sending everyone up to try to score, and they'd sent their keeper up, and it was a corner, and the ball kind of trickled out, and there was a fast break. And Wayne Rooney, the only person who sprinted back, if the other player had, by the way, just tried to get the ball in the air and pass it, you wouldn't even have to shoot. Wayne Rooney rushed back, slide tackled the guy at about the halfway line.
Midfield, yeah.
Got the ball back, prevented the other team from scoring on it, and let's be clear, open net. And then turned around, ran about 5 meters and just lifted this perfect cross to the back post where the DC United player headed it in. It was sincerely one of the single greatest overall plays I've ever seen watching this sport.
He dropped a dime from probably 40 yards out and across field. So he was probably actually kicking this thing like 50 yards.
Right. After he saved the game.
After he saved the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, after he saved the point, like he saved the draw with the game-saving tackle that he had to sprint back for. And then he drops the dime on the back post. It was fantastic. And the thing that got me was just to bring back another classic. was our good friend Alexi Lalas had thoughts on this.
And his
thought was basically, yeah, you know, it's a good play, but there's a lot of guys in MLS who can make that play.
Oh my God.
They absolutely are not.
How can you look at a play like that and think that it's not about, like, to be frank, it's not about just like who can do this. It's that you should just step back and see the big picture of how incredible what Rooney did was, I'd never seen anything like this. It was a 6-point swing in 1 5-second play, because that was a goal for the other team. I'm pretty sure it was Sporting Kansas City. I'm not sure if I'm right about that. But regardless, it was a goal and a loss that he turned into a goal and a win. It's in one play by itself. It's incredible.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Lots of people can do that, though. If a lot
of MLS players could do that, we would fucking see it. But you know who we've seen do shit like that this season? We've seen Wayne Rooney do shit like that. We've seen Zlatan do shit like that. Like, the people see doing the ridiculous stuff are the better European players. We don't see the normal level of MLS talent pulling off the ridiculous super plays, and there's a reason. It's because they can't.
Yeah, and
because if they could, they'd be playing in better leagues.
Well, and that's the thing. I've been trying to think, like, whether, like, Rooney's resurgence and his truly impressive play has actually been because he's kind of doing a resurgence and playing better and cares more, or is it because MLS is just worse than maybe I thought? And I think it may be a little bit of both.
It's a little bit both. I mean, I think it's about right when people say that a lot of people say that MLS is kind of on par talent wise with the second division in England. So the English championship, it's like somewhere around there, maybe like slightly below that average. And I think if you drop Wayne Rooney down to that level, he's going to tear there too. What Rooney's problem, the source of his decline in the Premier League was mostly just a loss of athleticism. Like, he just wasn't fast enough to play either striker or the number 10 role. Like, he's just fucking slow. And also just a more bruising campaign. But at MLS, he's just, his technical ability is so far above everyone else's that, you know, it doesn't matter that he doesn't have to track back on defense all the time.
And what that shows, I think, is how if you're a smart MLS team, you do build around these kind of youth. Like, you use the Atlanta, try to do as much of the Atlanta model as you can, but it is also useful to go out and get one of these bigger international players like Rooney or Zlatan. David Villa is one of the leading goal scorers in the history of the league, and he's only been there a few years. Like, it is useful to go out and get these players. I mean, Thierry Henry, who is extremely at the end of his career, is probably the best player ever in the history of MLS.
Yeah, I mean, it can be risky, right? So, like, when you go out and get
the Gerrard,
you end up with Gerrard, right? And then, you know, CVG just, you know, is just terrible, can't stay on the pitch, doesn't play well when he's there. Or, you know, a kind of slightly different version of that was Kaká, who was quite good when he did play, but just could not stay on the pitch. And your risk is that if you build too much around these players, which is almost inevitable if you bring them in, that you're going to build around them. If they're not good or not available, then you're kind of fucked.
Evan, tell me about the Campeones Cup.
Yo, it's happening. This is the Challenge Cup between the MLS champions and MLS champions and I think it's the Apura Cup.
The
Mexican League Cup. Yeah,
let's go, baby. Come on, MLS.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the end of September, so it's Toronto again. Fuck, who is the Mexican team playing?
I will care. I will. I decided that I will also. I will care and root for Toronto, even though I don't like Toronto that much. I will. I will 1,000% get involved.
My only problem with it is the timing. Like, I don't love the timing of it. It would be better if it's like played more at the type of time that like the normal Super Cups are played, like right before the season is to get everybody hyped for the new season and like remember who the old champions were. Like, that'd be a better time. But
this might give the MLS team a better shot, though.
Yeah, probably
fair, because they have been playing all season and they're like in form. All right, last thing that's happened that we wanted to talk about, because it's gonna be a big deal in the next couple of weeks, Champions League draw. And we have a couple of really, really, really interesting things that happened. First of all, Newell's Young Boys. Hell yeah, baby. Newell's Young Boys is an incredibly hilarious club. They are a kind of legacy club. I'm really glad they're back, Evan.
They're Swiss, right?
I think so. They are? I don't know.
Yeah. Young Boys is a fucking weird name for a team. And I know that there's also, I think that there's an Argentinian club.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
I think that's the Young Boys. I think Pochettino is associated with them. It's fucking weird. I understand that it is, you know, there's a lot of history behind that name, and it goes all the way probably back to like the 18 fucking 90s or something. And it probably made a lot more sense in the 1890s, but it's just fucking weird.
It is extremely weird. I don't understand it. I love it though. And another team that I love that I do understand, Red Star Belgrade, back in the mix, back in the Champions League. I'm a huge Red Star Belgrade fan. It's not been that long since they've been around, but Red Star Belgrade did win the Champions League back in the day. They were, I mean, their history is amazing. They were the team that was associated with the communist army in Yugoslavia, right? In back when it was Yugoslavia. Serbia. I don't know the Eastern European stuff, but I do
know
it was
Yugoslavia. Yeah, it was Tito's Yugoslavia.
Yeah, and they were the team associated with the Communist People's Army. And there's their derby, the Belgrade Derby, is them playing against their political opponents, which is one of the reasons why it's one of the most intense derbies in the entire world. There's someone who you should follow if you're interested in this, Kirsten Schlawitz. On Twitter is someone who really specializes, especially in the kind of clubs and teams of the former Yugoslavia. She does really, really good work on that stuff. So everyone should follow her. They, Red Star Belgrade, are probably in one of the three groups that are probably we could call the groups of death. They're with Napoli, Liverpool, and PSG. Napoli, I mean, that's a really good group. I think, Evan, unfortunately, Spurs also in sort of a group of death with Barca, PSV, and Inter. Inter, the only reason I say that it's sort of a group of death, I think Spurs are probably favored to come out with Barca, but Inter has made a lot of investments this summer, and they are sort of trying to get back into being the club that they used to be, which was always sort of a force in Europe. Not really. They won, I think, one Champions League, but they were never quite like AC Milan, who are their rivals, but they were definitely always a force. They haven't been for a long time. I sort of think they are now. PSV also is one of these teams that always can provide a shock result occasionally, so that's a tough group.
I refuse to believe that Milan is good until I see that Milan is good. Just,
yes, well, we'll see.
Refuse.
They went out and got Raja Nainggolan, and they were flirting with Modric, but it was a pretty comical flirtation, I got to say. They included a flirtation that people made fun of a lot that included a old school, like a hilarious Modric impersonator showing up in an Inter jersey. I don't know who did that, but that was pretty funny. And then the other group is Juve, Valencia, and Manchester United, and of course Young Boys.
Yeah,
which is another strong group. I think it'll be a real fight between Valencia, who have been getting better every year, and United, who are in Mourinho crisis year. I think it's a classic time for United to crash out of the Champions League. So
one takeaway just from these three groups is like the English clubs got fucked,
except for Manchester City, who is in arguably the easiest group.
City's in a very easy group, but yes, Spurs, Liverpool, and United all got probably those three groups are the three toughest groups.
And then, of course, there is, as you noted, the inverted reverse group of death, just like we had during the World Cup. We have one now. Lokomotiv Moscow, Galatasaray, Porto, and Schalke rounding out one of the worst groups in the history of the Champions League. That is just a terrible group.
Competing for the right to lose badly in the round of 16.
Obviously, I think Porto and Schalke are probably favored to come out of this group. But I think at this point, Galatasaray and even Lokomotiv probably are in with a shout just based on the overall quality of the opposition. I mean, like, yikes. Bayern and Real Madrid also came away with a relatively easy draw. Bayern more so than Madrid. Madrid, who have Roma in their group, there's always a possibility that they could. Roma, who really did a great job last season. Yeah, so that's sort of where the Champions League is. I don't know. I mean, we have a ton more to talk about. There's been a lot of really hilarious drama and like banter. I mean, hashtag banter on Twitter between these clubs. I think the funniest thing is the way that Roma has, which has, and I think I'm being fair, one of the funniest English social media accounts. They have gotten into these hilarious banter fights with these clubs. And so I'm excited to see how that plays out. Everyone should probably follow that. It's funny as hell.
Yeah.
All right. So that's sort of where we are for this week. We will be back. We're going to be recording on the weekend. So that's when your Let's Hoops Football will be out. We're going to do more interviews. We're going to get back to the kind of, this is our second season, baby. It's going. Let's go. We started this show last year around now. And I think it's fair to start the second season around now, too. So, yeah. Right. Evan, great talking to you, buddy.
Yeah, man. Catch you later.
You can't stand me now. Please don't get me wrong, see I forgive you and the song will come a likely lands. But if it's left to you, I know exactly what you do with all the dreams we had. Cause blood runs thicker, it's thick as these, you know. It's important to you.
It's important to me.
I try to make you see, but you don't want to know.
If you pop will come along and get forgiven in a song, I'll have to touch my life. It's all my rights, all my wrongs, when they need it, the new songs welcome back outside. The blood runs thicker, oh, with thick as these, you know.
That's important to you.
It's important to me.
I tried to make you see,
you
but
know.
You don't want to know.
Oh, what became of the likely life? What became of the dreams we had? Oh,
what became of forever? Came up forever, no one ever knows. But please don't get me wrong, see I forgive you in a song called The Likely Lands. We all bought the ones, we taught the world, we wrote the songs, it's still the dreams we have. But blood runs thicker, oh, what thick as these, you know. That's important to you,
it's important to me.
I try to make you see, but you don't want to know.
Oh, what became of the likely light? What became of the dreams we had? Oh,
what became of forever?
Of the